What does loyalty imply? Loyalty to the charism. It implies three things. It implies knowledge of that charism. It implies love of that charism, with which the person who becomes a religious of that community somehow identifies. Otherwise, should he not enter that community or enter another one? Or not become a religious? And people are different in marriage. The few weddings that I've assisted at, I never dare say this to the couple. But I thought to myself, I wonder what she sees in him. That's not the point, right? We can see in one another what God wants us to see, and that's what makes society, including religious communities. So there should be a love that wants to identify with that charism. And thirdly, commitment. And a religious vocation. He is never a religious vocation in the abstract. It is always, otherwise it's not a genuine vocation. It is a religious vocation to this or that community, which means a society reflecting this or that charism. Commitment. The desire and the willingness to spend the rest of one's life animated by the spirit of the one whom the religious admires. Finally, just a little clarification between, and I've had to work out these terms and have passed them on to others, especially when they're having chapters, between what I call the father of a community and the founder. Now, the church does not technically distinguish, and both can be called founder, but there is a difference. Thus, take Benedict was the actual father and founder of those who literally and lineally traced their, well now, almost 1,500 years existence to Benedict. But since then, many communities, each canonically and juridically distinct, have come into existence for whom he might be, but only very loosely, be called the founder. He is rather, and this is my vocabulary, the father. Francis, the same way. Communities in the Franciscan tradition. Our father, St. Francis. But our founder or founders may be this or that person. Dominic and Ignatius. No, with Ignatius. Most religious institutes of women since the 16th century have been deeply affected by the Ignatian spirit, mainly because he was the one, as you recall in our classes on the history of religious life, who made the major breakthrough in bringing into existence religious life fully authenticated, but not under solemn vows, which then made it possible for women to form apostolic active congregations in simple vows and yet be fully identified as religious. Now I submit that charism then spans both father and founder, but mainly father, though not excluding also the more immediate, if you want to call it, person that, the founder, the one who established this or that of the 4,000 religious institutes canonically recognized in the church today.
4,000. Our constitution, which is significantly characteristic of our congregation, but we follow the rule of St. Augustine, so in spirit. So St. Augustine would be, let's just say, our father, more or less.
Yes, you may say so. Now, there may be communities, and most modern communities do reflect certain segments or aspects of maybe several communities. But then there ought to be some identifiable distinctive characteristics, so that in drawing, say, on whomever, take Ignatius, he drew on Francis, he drew on Benedict, he drew on Dominic, he drew on many people, you see. But then there was a new, you might say, synthesis. So even though there might be a number, including, say, the rule of Augustine, nevertheless, there should be something in your constitutions and your rules that you can specify and say, this identifies us. So what time do we go? Please?
Quarter to
11. All right, number 5, section 5, number 3. How to encourage without flattery. First, I think we should define two terms, encouragement and flattery. To encourage someone means to give that person moral support, which means somehow to strengthen their will. How do you do that? By approval? By praise? Or cooperation, to mention just three ways of giving moral support: approval, praise, or cooperation. What is the net effect of encouragement? The net effect is to help a person continue in a given course of action in spite of obstacles and maybe great difficulties that he or she is experiencing. What does it mean to flatter? To flatter means to praise another person deceitfully. The essence of flattery is deceit. It's praise, all right, but there's something wrong with it. Flattery is therefore dishonest praise. And it may be dishonest, if you please, in six ways. Sometimes I ask myself, why do you analyze and keep analyzing? But I hope it helps. The praise may be dishonest and therefore becomes flattery, first because it is self-interested. You praise somebody, but with a hook. You want something back, like maybe have that person praise you. So self-interested praise is a form of flattery. Or it's not really meant, it's not sincere. And by the way, you've got to be a real con artist to praise insincerely and get away with it. Third, it may be praise, all right, but given grudgingly. A person must almost have to pull the words out of your mouth. Or the praise becomes flattery when it is given beyond reason. So the person did something which was creditable. So you say something nice, but you pile it on, and you stay on it, and you go back to it 3 times in 5 minutes. All right? It's given beyond reason. Or fifth, it is not balanced with prudence. There are ways and ways of praising people. There are times when you praise people. For example, it would be imprudent to praise one person in the presence of another who might envy your praise of person A. See, wait until B is someplace else. Then to their ear. That is a good job. And sixth, it is not done out of any other motive but love. Genuine praying is always inspired by charity. Any motive less than love is at least tinged, if not infected by flattery. Now the problem, and why we even want to address ourselves to this question. And there is a problem. First, people need to be encouraged. Have no doubt. It is in fact essential to human achievements. Show me a person who has achieved, and I'll show you a person who has received praise. We need acceptance. We cannot do without it. But while the need is there, and the value of encouragement, say as praise, there are two problems. One is a danger, the other is a risk. The danger is that the person will be harmed by your praise. Suppose the praise is injudicious. And it may well be. There's a real art in knowing how to praise people. They can become big-headed. Maybe more than they can take. It may be that they will miss. Well, this is the second part. There's a risk of being misunderstood. So the first is the danger of the person being harmed, and the other of being misunderstood. And what we're addressing ourselves to is one of the hardest things in dealing with people. On the one hand, they must be praised, must be encouraged. On the other hand, common sense tells us you better know how to do it. Otherwise, the person will either be harmed or my own motive may be misunderstood and I can be harmed. The praiser can be harmed. Oh, she's after something. I know. She's not the type that praises. He may have lost a friend. Now, some practical suggestions, and you're going to shoot me for this. I have 17, pardon me for counting everything inside, 'to praise as we should. And anyone who wants to influence others better know how to praise them. First, know a person. This means observation. You don't praise strangers, sight unseen. Because what you may see and looks praiseworthy may not be praiseworthy at all. First, then, know the person. Second, recognize the need. We all have it. Some need more, others need less. Some need praise every hour on the hour. And if you miss an hour, they're sad. Third, meet the reasonable need of the other person. I inserted the word reasonable need. Some person's need for praise is excessive. And if you begin to give into it, you're not helping that person. Just making it worse. Fourth, some people can take more praise than others. And the problem is how much this person can take. Fifth, adjust to that person, to the time and especially the circumstances. The person is now in an emotional high. The last thing they need is more praise. Six. By preference, sometimes it shouldn't be done, sometimes it cannot be done. But in general, by preference, praise privately. During our first 4 years in the novitiate and juniorate, we used to have sermons every Saturday in Our Lady and every Sunday a regular homily in the dining room above the din and the clatter of dishes, knives, and forks. It had to be a good sermon for anybody to listen because he was so preoccupied with the meal. Maybe I told you this, but it's apropos of this. I remember exactly who said it, under what circumstance. It was a Sunday noon meal, and this young man got up with a strong PA system. "Dear brethren in Christ," he asked us, "who do you think is the most unpopular girl on the college campus?" We all stopped eating. Now that's a start for a homily. So we figured we'd wait long enough to have him tell us. And he caught our attention. "The most unpopular girl on a college campus is the one who has just won the popularity contest." Right? Pray by preference privately. Seven. Anticipate what you will say. Make it short, clear, and to the point. I'm not suggesting writing out your praises beforehand. I am suggesting think what you're going to say. Because while you're praising, that person's ears are wide open. Let me tell you. We forget most things that people say. We hardly forget when we've been praised. Don't say too much. Eighth. Praise what you know. Praise what you see. Not what you're not sure about or what you cannot see. And no less than we should not impute bad motives for bad actions, we should not impute motives beyond what we see. Makes sense, right? Praise what is reasonably praiseworthy. Only God reads the human heart. Ninth. Praise especially the good qualities, actions, and words of people who you know are given to discouragement. I cannot think of more Christ-like charity than that. 10. Praise people whom you like and also people whom you dislike. That, needless to say, is not easy to do. 11. Praise the person first in your own mind, then to the other person. Pardon me. Praise first in your own mind, then to other persons, and then, if you think it's beneficial, the person, him or herself. You know the difference? It's not the same as praising in the presence of another person. Learn to think. Praising thoughts. Speak praising words about others. And then, if it would be useful, Don't be casual in your praise. In fact, if you are, you will lose the effectiveness. There are people who are congenital praisers, and when their praise comes, they praise everything and everybody in sight. You almost wish they'd hold back once in a while. Think beforehand whether you should praise, especially to the person, him or herself. 13. There is praise of action, not only in words. Praising words can be cheap. There's a way of accepting a person into an enterprise, sharing something with another person, inviting the person to join in some work which immediately they will recognize. This is praise. This is recognition. In other words, praising by act is more effective than praising in words. 14. If you are in authority, do not hesitate to rebuke or correct the very person that maybe just 5 minutes before you had praised. Indeed, one reason why some who are in authority find it difficult to rebuke or correct is because they've so seldom praised. And the person who is, say, rebuked, well, there she goes again. People ask me, why did the Holy Father do the incredible thing of plucking the head of the Gregorian University in Rome, Father Martini, and make him Archbishop of Milan? Can he be cardinal also soon? We're not supposed to become bishops, except maybe in mission countries. And even then, it must be under holy obedience by the Pope. Why did he do that? Well, I don't know. People have asked me. But I think one reason is the Pope wanted to praise the Society of Jesus, even as he is rebuking us right and left. And people will take correction from a person who has learned to judiciously praise them. You know what I'm saying? This is very valuable advice. 15. Do not praise over much, as either too many people or the same person. Too often, you might even recall. When was the last time I praised her? Well, just this morning. They'll hold off. Find somebody else to praise. Or you'll have to look around and find praiseworthy things. It's remarkable what things we find in some people and what things we miss in others. 16. Praise as soon after an action as possible. Even as a rebuke should not wait too long, so praise should come soon. Otherwise, the value wears off. And finally, and this is the hard one, and ask God to enlighten you. Give the impression that God should be praised for what you are praising in another person. Maybe a simple phrase. God has really been good to you. What you said, what you did, shows how good God is. I'm sure you are thanking him for his gift to you. So much for Section 5, How to Encourage Without Flattery.